Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Mac and T Show podcast. Here are your hosts, Brian McKay and T. Davis.
This is the Mac and T Show. This is the Mac and T Show. We talk movies and TV shows, sports and world news, coasting like on a world cruise. Hosted by Brian McKay and T. Davis. Yeah, you can't tame us. We're going to the top, we're becoming famous.
What time is it?
It's time for the Mac and T Show.
What time is it?
I said it's time for the Mac and T Show.
Welcome back to the Mac and T Show podcast. NBA playoffs. Western Conference Game 1 was last night. The Oklahoma City Thunder and Sweet Billy D take down the Golden State Warriors 108-102, snapping the Warriors' 88-game winning streak when up by 10 at the half, 10 or more at the half, excuse me. And that includes regular season and playoffs. I thought that the Thunder might win a game or two in this series. I didn't think they would win game one. I will say this, I watched a good majority of the game. Golden State, I'm all for a little showboating, but Golden State, it's almost like they were excessive last night. I mean, it's like they were flexing and doing all these little things after every made shot, and it just kind of really got on my nerves watching it. So I'm hoping, you know, maybe this was a little wake-up call, because I want them. You know, as for a team that's trying to go out and prove that last year wasn't a fluke, you act like you've been there before. You don't have to do all this showboating and, you know, dancing and all this other stuff. And, you know, and you lost game one of the Western Conference Finals, so there you go.
Well, they've been acting like that, and it's been kind of annoying, because I get tired of all of them, Curry included. Like, I don't even know if he still hit his chest and kiss his finger and toss it up to the air or turn around and do the bicep. So, it's been annoying. They've been doing it, and it's been annoying. And if they keep it up, they're going to be at home, like San Antonio, wondering what happened.
Yeah, I mean, there was one point last night where Curry went up over Steven Adams for the Thunder, scored, fell down, flexed from the ground, then got up and flexed again. And I just, you know.
Like, the great teams, and if y'all want to be one of the great teams, I'm the Lakers. Okay, I got a soul with my 80s Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
Did we ever see Magic Johnson and them acting a fool after they made great plays? They just played.
Right.
Did you ever see Michael Jordan and his crew after they dunk on somebody, he run back down the court? Okay, the one game that he was on fire because he wasn't a three-point shooter and hit like six threes or something stupid, and you know he hunched his shoulders like, I don't know what's happening. But that was like a consistent thing all the time. Like, those were anomalies. Like, that rarely happened.
Right, the famous shoulder shrug against the Portland Trailblazers.
So, the 2000 Lakers, when they were on that stream, Shaq, they had fun, and Shaq did his goofy walk when he might do something, but it wasn't all the time. Every time they made a big play, they didn't act a fool. Not to my recollection.
Right.
Detroit Pistons, the bad boys, they were nasty. But again, I mean, this team right here, like you said, it's annoying. Like, dude. Enough already. You been like you've been there. You don't hit a 3-point shot before. You don't hit and got fouled or whatever. Just stop it with this flexing. I'm tired of everybody flexing. LeBron flexing. Ain't none of y'all got no real muscle. If you ain't Dwayne Johnson, go sit down somewhere.
The Eastern Conference kicks off tonight. East Conference Finals between the Cleveland Cavaliers and Toronto Raptors. Do you see another sweep, or do you think Toronto had the chance to win a game or two?
I think Toronto might still win or two.
I mean, if you go off regular season, Toronto won the regular season series 2-1. But, I mean, obviously it's different in the playoffs.
It is, but, I mean, with that being said, they're not going to go in there scared. And so, you know, I think a lot of teams be intimidated. And obviously, they ain't going to never say that. But if you don't beat them a couple of times, in the back of your mind, you're not going to go into the game saying, dying, we ain't never beat them.
Right.
I think they'll steal one or two and then just lose it. Like, if they just, or an injury, the Cavaliers got too much firepower for them.
Yeah, especially the way they've been playing this postseason. I mean, they're finally clicking, it seems like. So it'll be
yeah, now, if they want to keep shooting all these threes, though, now that could be their downfall. Because while, yeah, you had that streak of hitting them.
That last game against Atlanta, they were not on fire like they had been. I mean, they still won the game, but their three-point fire, it fizzled out.
Yeah, Atlanta ain't no good. Hang on, they ain't counting. DeMar, like you said the other day, if DeMar and the other boy play well, then it'll be a good game.
Yeah, Kyle.
If one of them show up and the other one doesn't, then it's gonna just be 0-4.
Yeah, if Kyle, they're gonna go as Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan go. That's as simple as that. For tonight, at halftime of tonight. I think at halftime, maybe before the game, I can't remember which, they're holding the annual NBA draft lottery.
Oh, thank you. Come on, Paul. Be good to us, Lottery
now,
Paul.
Now, just hypothetical. Uh-huh. Don't come through the phone on me, but hypothetical. If, by some chance, your Lakers get their fourth pick, and have to give it to the Philadelphia 76ers, how mad are you going to be?
I'm going to be real mad. They should have never made no trade where you giving up that it ain't top five protected. I ain't never heard of no top three protected. Like, what's the chance of you getting top three? Real slim. Even if you're the worst team, they should have had that top five protected. So that's another bad decision on Bus. I'm sure that was Jimmy when I think they got... Either what's that boy, Superman or something. So when
yeah,
they traded for him,
I've never heard of a top three. It's always been top five when you see top five protected when you see trades like that. Never top three.
Yeah, but, so Philly was somewhere laughing when Dum Dum said that, and so now I ain't gonna be that upset. It'll just be like, oh well, that's another reason to get rid of Jimbo.
Yeah, I think the sooner they get rid of him, the better for all involved. I'd be interested to see where my Bulls wind up, since unfortunately they are in the lottery again this year for the first time in almost, I think, a little over a decade.
Well, the thing is, this ain't no good lot. I mean, this ain't no good draft. It's probably gonna be some young men that, you know, that might develop into something, but this ain't no heavy draft where you're going to get, like, no 10, probably not even barely 5 good players coming out.
Right. I mean, this is one of them, you know, usually you go into the draft and you know there's a good 5 or 6 that are going to be NBA stars or have the chance to be. You don't really know that with anybody in this draft.
I don't know. Half of the people on the list, I'm like, I don't even know who these people are. I've been trying to YouTube and see their highlights.
Right, because most of them are, you know, teams that, you know, maybe didn't make the NCAA tournament or were put out early and didn't really make any noise. And, like, I think I saw one guy from Syracuse that was staying in the draft, and I'm thinking to myself, I don't even remember him. And they went all the way, you know, as far as to the Final Four. And I don't even remember anything about him.
Okay. Let me just say this. I'm just reading this right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now the Toronto Raptors are gonna get swept if they this thing talking about DeMar DeRozan wants to sign with the Lakers. First of all, he ain't no free agent yet, and I don't know when this conversation happened, but apparently Stephen A. Smith, as transcribed by Ryan Ward of the Laker Nation, he made it very, very clear that he wants to be in LA. Smith said of DeRozan's intentions in free agency. He has family out there. He's from out there. He wants to be in L.A. He wants to wear purple and gold. And if there's a way for it to happen again, he's restricted. If there's a way for it to happen, DeMar DeRozan, will be a Los Angeles Lakers uniform next season.
Yeah, I had heard that this has been kind of out there because of Stephen A. the last couple weeks. So I had heard that. But I, like you, unless there's a trade involved, there's no real reason for that to even come to fruition.
First of all, I don't know why they want him. He a solid player. We can't get solid players.
No, y'all need a stud out there in La La Land.
Yeah. In the West. You can't get solid players. He over there doing well in the East. No. This ain't having to play against Westbrook and all them every night in, night out. So, go ahead. I'm sorry. Let's keep moving.
That's going to bring us to our first break. On the other side, we'll get into our latest Empire season review. One more episode this week. And, the season finale actually tomorrow. So, be interesting to see what happened in last week's episode if you haven't seen it already. We'll get into that and much more. This has been the Mac and T Show.
What time is it? What time is it?
Welcome back to the Mac and T Show podcast, Empire. Season 2, Episode 17, Rise by Sin. I'm just going to do it kind of like last week. It's going to be a little different without Mama here. But just first thing I want to talk about is the dynamic between Jamal and D Majors and, including Lucius in this past episode. D Majors is really staying hard to his being in the closet publicly. He and Jamal were having another moment in the studio when Lucius walked in. And, D Majors really flipped out, acted as if Jamal had come on to him and in order, to basically save face in front of Lucius. After D Major storms out, Lucius and Jamal have words. Lucius basically tells him he knows that D Major is on the DL. It's not a real secret that he thinks he is. Everybody in the music community pretty much knows. Lucius again bashes Jamal for his lifestyle choices, and it ends with a heated back and forth, where Jamal eventually will snap on Lucius, tells him, "I'm not crying." Big words coming from a man who is crying about his mama throwing him in some water 40 years ago. "You always telling me, stop crying, Ma, put it in your music." Well, I'm going to tell you, stop crying, Lucius, put it in your music. And Lucius grabs him by the throat, tells his son that you ain't nothing but a disappointment to me, and the day you die from AIDS, I'm going to celebrate.
See, now why would you write that in there? And what was the point of the day you died from AIDS?
I don't know. I guess.
What is the point of that? See, and these are the things that bother me about. Don't this what's this writer's name? The writer this.
Lee Daniels.
Doesn't he identify as a MSM? And for those who don't know, that's the man who has sex with men. Is he not a gay male?
I think I read that somewhere that it was a possibility, but I don't know for sure.
Well, because this right here, that's unacceptable. I don't have no dog in the fight, but just speaking for the own, and I can't speak for the whole group, but that would be irritating to me for him to say something like that. Other people get AIDS. Yes, it's higher population for MSM and a higher risk for men who have sex with men. But why would you say as soon as you got from AIDS, who said he had HIV?
Right.
Okay. Okay, go ahead.
Now, this scene I thought was really intense. Forgetting, what was right, what was wrong about everything that was said, the scene really showed the strengths of both of these actors. I thought Terrence really shined in this role. I mean, because, you know, he's always been a, you know, quote unquote butthole, but he really came, you know, came into his character in this scene. Moving on, let's see, with Cookie and Jamal. Obviously, Jamal's still enraged about his encounter with Lucius, and he's trying to tell Cookie all about it, but she keeps blowing him off, you know, because as we've seen in the past couple episodes, Cookie has sort of been all about Lucius and, you know, kind of sprung on Lucius a little bit, so she's kind of blowing him off. Then Jamal mentions, you know, instead of talking about his music, he mentions Frida. And that got Cookie's attention. Her rabbit ears kind of perked up. And then she, you know, goes on to reveal to, because she tells Jamal, you know, you got to get away from that girl. You got to get away from her. She goes on to reveal that the reason she got out of prison early was because she snitched on Frida's father, Frank Gathers. She also tells her son that Lucius had Frank basically taken care of in prison. And she tells him, you know, he would have killed us all. You know, he was a bad man. He'd have killed us all. For me, I've been kind of getting frustrated with all the Frida stuff when it comes to Cookie. Like, you know, so worried about Frida. I'm going to lay it out. You have Cookie secret, you know, just secretly this whole time telling Jamal not to work with Frida over and over again. Doesn't ever tell him why. Then 5 episodes later, when she tells him why, she's literally, now all these other times been in secret little places, you know, not getting public here. She literally wide out in the open at Empire telling him where anybody and everybody can hear. So, you know, basically Cookie is trying, you know, taking Frida's chance away from being a star, you know, being somebody, taking money off her plate, you know, food off her plate, money out of her pocket because of something that basically Cookie and Lucius has done. I mean, they didn't have to get involved with this Frank Gathers, but they chose to way back, and, you know, that's what caused everything to fall where it went.
Wait a minute, I'm not understanding. You saying that she did what? Is she taking chances from this girl?
I'm just saying hypothetically, you know, with her trying to get Jamal not to work with Frida, I feel like she, you know, she's taking chances away from Frida, you know, getting her name out there and getting some exposure, and it's all because of, you know, Cookie and Lucius's past with Frank Gathers.
Well, I mean, she ain't got no lawyer to that girl.
I know. It's just frustrating to me. And, you know, and maybe that was the reason to make her, you know, to make that girl's character seem sympathetic in that way. Maybe that was the reason, and they got me, and that's good.
They got you.
Well, moving on to my next subject, Tariq the Freak. Tariq, obviously, is the FBI agent we come to know from last episode. Cookie confronts Tariq at Leviticus when she found out Carol was going to have a date with him. She tells him that, you know, she knows he's with the FBI and he better not be coming for her and her family. He kind of plays it off like, you know, he don't know what she's talking about. Carol gets upset, accuses Cookie of trying to steal her boyfriend, and I put in quotations again, and that Cookie was jealous of her, and Cookie doesn't care about her, just like Candace has been saying, you know, been saying all these years, Cookie don't care about anybody but Cookie. So Carol goes on her date with Tariq, winds up drinking, and that violated, even though she didn't get drunk, it violated the agreement she and Cookie had for her living with Cookie. So after an argument between the two, Cookie kicks Carol out, tells her she will no longer be going with her to the Aces, you know, all the stuff, basically kicks her out of life. Tariq is clearly after Lucius for some reason, maybe more than Lucius, maybe Cookie as well, but definitely Lucius. Not really clear yet, but we do see in one scene, he has Boo Boo Kitty in the interrogation room, which will lead into the next episode, but he has her in there, and, you know, I guess he's going to try and question her, get some information out of her. He mentions to Cookie, when Cookie confronted him about Lucius killing Bunky, so he does know about that. Obviously, he's just basically picking up where the other lady that was after Lucius is kind of left off. So, you know, I don't know what new information he has. That other lady, she botched everything because basically her star witness turned up dead. What was the uncle's name that Andre killed? I can't think of his name anymore.
Andre killed?
Yeah, I don't think he meant to. He just smacked him on the back of the head with that thing, wound up bleeding to death.
Oh, no. Okay, Bucky got
Vernon,
killed.
Vernon. Yes, Vernon. See, Vernon was supposed to be that other lady, FBI lady, star witness. He winds up dead, comes up missing.
That's right.
So.
Oh, well.
Yeah. So we shall see how that goes down. I'm sure that's going to be a big part of the next episode as well. Andre and Mama Walker get put on lockdown. Andre trying to rush Mama Walker out of the house, take her to the Aces, when they are met by Thirsty and his goons, who put them... And why Lucius has a panic room in his house, I don't understand. But they put them in a panic room at the Lion House, and it's basically, just a security room that they get locked in. They have TVs in there, so they're able to watch the award show. But here's my question with this scene. What was Andre thinking? What is he hoping to accomplish? If he brings his grandmother and it comes out who she is, Lucius loses all credibility in the company. But the company, in my mind, would suffer so much, even if Andre is to get named CEO in the aftermath of everything, which is, I think that's what his big picture, you know, that's what he wants. The company, in my mind, wouldn't be worth having at that point. I think it would suffer so much bad publicity, but we shall see.
He's so excited that somebody, now he got some link to why he crazy, and I don't want to use the word crazy.
Yeah.
This mental
disorder. Right. I know what
so
you mean.
His judgment is clouded. And, where did Thirsty take him? Because he should have. Thirsty should have came and kidnapped your grandma and took her to a new home because that lady needs to be incarcerated.
Well, they put him down in this little panic room and they eventually get out, and we'll get to that in a minute. But the Ace Awards. This was, it felt like a real live, award show red carpet situation where everybody's coming in, there's pictures being taken, interviews going on. This would have been a really good opportunity for them to bring back like all the those people that made guest appearances, like Alicia Keys, Gladys, yeah. all the singers that have come in and made guest appearances. This would have been a nice place for them to kind of just, they didn't even have to have a speaking role, just be there to be, to be pictured, seen on the red carpet. You know, this would have been a good opportunity for that to happen. It didn't. But it still, it really felt like they were on the red carpet at the Grammys, just doing their thing. Jabal, still steaming from everything with Lucius and Cookie from earlier, runs into Frida, tells her that after the awards and everything gets over, she needed to find another label and get away from Empire. Frida's obviously was confused, and Jamal really didn't elaborate, because, obviously there's cameras all around, people all around. But it was enough to have her thinking, and we'll see where that thinking leads a little later on. During an interview with Lucius and Cookie, they are interrupted by a drunk Carol. Carol, comes in yelling and hollering. Just not being vicious, just being loud, how drunk folks. Carol begins... Cookie hugs her, pulls her in close, tells her, she need to go home, and, she's really trying hard not to make a scene. Carol begins to leave. Lucius asks his guards to help make sure she gets out. On the way out, Carol runs into Frida, and this is where I put in my notes, a drunk man, drunk man's words are so a man's thoughts, because as Carol trying to get Frida to escort her back into the show, Frida tells her, she really can't right now. She got a lot more press to do, left to do. And then Carol goes off. Carol tells Frida the only reason she's even here is because Lucius feels bad about what he did to her daddy. She calls Frieda a hood rat, and is eventually is dragged out of the Aces. So Frieda starts having flashbacks from the first meeting with Lucius. Jamal and Hakeem warning her when she tells him Lucius is like a dad to her. And then we see the flashback of her dad, Frank Gathers, even telling her, you know, stay away from that man. So all the flashbacks stop. She's looking at Lucius. She hauls off in a sprint and steals the security guard's gun from his shoulder, knocks him out. And this is what I told you yesterday. They really used this scene. They really used her lack of height to her advantage. Because she knocks the guard out. She dips under some other people. I mean, they played it perfectly. She runs up on Lucius, aiming the gun at him. Jamal steps in, tries to stop her. But she pulls the trigger, takes Jamal out. So, we don't know. It's not, you know, not said whether whether Jamal is dead or not. After the episode ends, Jussie Smollett, who plays Jamal on the show, tweeted out basically, you know, thanks to everyone at Empire. Now I'm going to go take some time to make some music and make some, you know, and do some movies. So that leaves fans wondering.
He ain't going nowhere.
That leads into my predictions for this week episode tomorrow night. I think Jamal is spoofing everyone, and he's gonna wind up not being dead. And I think this episode tomorrow night will be the most watched episode of the series because people are gonna be wondering: is he dead? Is he not? What's gonna happen? I think he really played that well by coming out with that tweet because he never actually said he was leaving. Because, like I told you, he can make movies and do music and all and still do Empire. So that doesn't necessarily mean he's leaving, but that's the way he wants to portray it. I also think that Mama Walker is going to start all kinds of stuff because at the end of the episode, she walks out into the streets of the hospital. And there's reporters and cameras all around. They bum rush her because obviously she's coming out the hospital. They want to know, is she a member of the family? Does she have any information about Jamal? And her last words we hear her speak, yes, I am a member of the family. And she's looking into the camera, and that's when the show ends. The episode ends. So I can't wait to see what she does, what she says. This week's episode, tomorrow night, we're going to have the wedding between Hakeem and Laura, but apparently it's not going to actually go down that way, so we shall see.
Well, that was the fastest wedding ever. They just barely got back together, and now you're talking about they getting married.
Well, yeah, and, you know, his brother just got shot, so we're just going to have a wedding. And I understand it's not a week later in storyline purposes, but still. But, yeah.
Yeah, I don't even remember that conversation happening. This was last week's episode. It's the only one that I haven't seen. So I don't even remember them talking about planning the wedding or anything. Maybe I was fast asleep for 2 seconds and missed it. I don't know.
Right. I don't know. It just kind of happened, you know. But, that's going to take us to our next break. On the other side, we're going to talk a little bit about the United Shades of America TV show, the latest episode from the CNN show, and a little bit of world news. But that's for the other side. This has been the Mac and T Show.
What time is it?
Welcome back to the Mac and T Show podcast. W. Kamau Bell, a comedian, has a TV show called United Shades of America that airs on CNN Sunday nights. This past episode was episode 4 of season 1 called Protect and Serve. that saw Bell travel to Camden, New Jersey, which in 2012 was named the United States' most dangerous city. He's there to check out the new way of policing the community that's going on in Camden, which is actually an old method called walking the beat, which used to happen back in the, I call them the black and white era, back when, you know, when every video you see is all in black and white from that a long time ago. It's basically a way of trying to gain the trust of the community. And you see Bell go on a couple of different, he walks the streets with one of the police officers. He rides in another one's car. He talks to a bunch of the people of Camden, you know, a bunch of the, and he talks to all different, he talks to black people, he talks to white people, he talks to Mexicans, just what they think about police officers, and the police officers are standing right there with him. You know, what do they think about him? And, you know, a lot of people were real, oh yeah, we love, you know, we love having them around, blah, blah, blah. Then there's other ones that are brutally honest and saying things that they could do differently. And one thing I really thought was cool that Camden police have, and I'm sure the other police officers of the police stations have this as well, they have a virtual reality little, like, deal where they, you know, officers can go in and train on what to do in certain situations. And this, I mean, it's really, you know, lifelike. They have different scenarios where this one guy gets out of a car with a gun to his head, walking into City Hall, you know, and the police officers are talking to him, you know, from there in, trying to calm, in trying to defuse the situation. Eventually, you either got to make a choice, either shoot him, take him down, or, you know, whatever. Then there's another one that plays off the recent shootings in movie theaters, where police officers are running in, on a call into a movie theater, where they're, you know, they got shooters everywhere. They're trying to identify the shooters, find out who is, you know, who is who. They're going into the theater. They're taking out, you know, they got to try to defuse the situation at first. And then they get graded on everything. They, after they take the time to go through each of the little seminars, they get graded by their superiors on how they did, what they could have done differently. And even Bell himself, Kamal Bell himself, goes and takes, he actually did the one with the movie theater. And he said that, you know, his heart was racing, and it was like being in the moment. You could see that you got to make that split decision. Sometimes it might be the wrong decision, and, you know, you got to live with your decision, you know. And that was the whole purpose of going through the drill, was to see that, you know, sometimes you might get the wrong decision, but you're not necessarily a bad person. You just made the wrong decision. Now you got to live with that the rest of your life. And, you know, then they talked about the fact that even had some police officers say that there are bad officers out there. They're not denying it. They try to weed them out, but sometimes they fall through the cracks. So, you know, I thought it was a really good episode. Showed a lot of the Black Lives Matter movement. And, you know, kind of tied that into what Camden was trying to do to fix things in their community. And that really leads into what I want to talk about next, which was what happened at West Point. And I know I've not got a chance to read everything on it, so I'm going to let you have it.
Kind of tell you. Well, I mean, it really shouldn't even be in the paper. It shouldn't even be an issue, but so at West Point, they have a tradition. Every class pays homage to the old heads, as I would call them. That ain't what they call them. And so they have those real old gray, like some Civil War uniforms or something on. And they all take pictures. Every class, like, I guess you in groups or something, they take pictures. And they show pictures of, they send on this old, it looked like just a porch. I don't know what building it is. But, so it was like 16 black females, young ladies they're about to graduate, and they took three pictures. They had three different poses, and the final pose or in one of the poses, I don't know if it was the final one or which order they came in, they had their fist raised. I don't know who saw it, and then all of a sudden, the video I saw, some guy was like, he didn't like it. If you in the military, you don't get to have a political stance when you in uniform. And then it became somebody else saw it, and then the news got a hold of it, and then it was all, oh, they talking about Black Lives Matter. Now, these people, they ain't saying nothing about no Black Lives Matter because they raised their fists. People have been raising their fists for years and years before Black Lives Matter, before hashtags even came about, let alone Black Lives Matter. And now, because these women raised their fists in solidarity, saying, in my eyes, it wasn't a big deal. It was like, we did this together, and we all together in it, and that was it. But then somebody, you know, people get in and take it, oh, that's political, they talk, you don't know what they were talking about. A picture, yeah, they say a picture worth a thousand words. You can't infer what they were saying when they raised their fist. Right. So it shouldn't even be an issue. I don't even think they cared about no Black Lives Matter. Like I said, I thought it was like we did this together because I'm sure it was a fight to get through that whole process. And it was 16 of them, I think. It was quite a few of them. It was a gang of them. So I just was like, this is ridiculous that y'all trying to take this and just run with it to have something else to talk about, pretty much.
Well, I agree. It probably wasn't anything to do with Black Lives Matter. You know, it's just something they probably decided to do on their own because, like you say, they were, you know, finishing up and going through some, you know, really tough times, and they made it. So they were probably just doing it together in solidarity. But on the other side of that, had it been some white guys, you know, up there holding their hands up like the KKK or whatever will do in solidarity, they would have been just as many people outraged on the other end of it.
And well, I don't know what the KKK would do if they were doing something representing the KKK. The KKK ain't nothing good about the KKK. Nothing. I mean, they represent hate, and they'll tell you they don't like other races. If you're not white, then you're not right. And so, even if they were like, oh, they represent Black Panthers, they did good stuff for the community. That people want to talk about how, yeah, they did this, that, and the fifth, and they were rebels, and they didn't want to do whatever the police said. Well, they did great things for the community, and so the KKK, I don't know what, they might be doing something good for some community. I don't know what that might be. I've never heard.
Well, that's what I mean, like the perception. You being a Black female, your perception could be different than some white person's perception of the Black Panthers. And just like you have a different perception of the KKK, you know, obviously there may, like you said, they could have some different community efforts where there are some good things that the KKK is doing. We don't know. But, you know, it's just all about perception. And that's all I'm meaning is, had it been white people doing, you know, the hand signal of the KKK or whatever, it would have been that perception that would have caused issues. And I think that's what I'm trying to say, is the perception of them with their fists in the air. You know, some white people, you know, that don't understand the whole crux of the Black Panther movement could take that to be offensive. And that's all I'm saying. I'm saying the perception of it. And I'm saying,
well, you know, people need to not be ignorant and understand that, actually, I don't even think the raised fist, started with the Black Panthers. I want to say it started in a whole nother country, something like that. But anyway, we can't, I mean, everything that we do is under scrutiny.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's unfortunate for us because that's ridiculous. People raise their fists all the time. When an athlete do it, don't nobody say nothing. If he throw his fist up, nobody says, and I don't think people do it, like, oh, we won the championship, to have their fist up, or what, and they nobody say, oh, he's talking about Black Power, or they talking about Black Lives Matter, oh, just stop, people.
Well, And you know,
how they did it, and then get whatever answer you get, and if they say, oh, well, we were trying to do whatever, then take it from there. Don't just assume, and these people that were talking about it, they not even in the West Point. They don't even work at West Point. The guy said he saw it somewhere, and he was on it. Here we go, social media. He saw it and got offended. Some older man that had military background, he was so old, I don't even think he in the military and doing nothing associated with the military. He gave his 2 cents. Like, you don't have no idea what happened and why that happened, and the people that's in West Point, I'm sure they'll do their due diligence. Hopefully them young ladies got to graduate, because they still had a final exam or something to take, and I hope they don't just take that one incident and just be like, oh, all that work they done is thrown out of the window because somebody saw something and took it the wrong way.
Yeah, that's one thing. Like, I have not read anywhere where they got any information from these young ladies as to why they did it.
Right, and nobody said anything else. I guess, you know, West Point is keeping it on the low. I mean, whatever they do is in-house or whatever, so we probably never know.
And I'm not sure that even the media is trying to find out, because you and I both have said many times how the media likes sensationalized. So they may not even be trying. They want to just keep this, you know, in the news the way it is, which is altogether wrong.
So let me read this to you and our people. The power fist, the race fist, this is because I read this before, is a symbol of solidarity and support. It is also used as a salute to express unity, strength, defiance, or resistance. The salute dates back to ancient Assyria. And that's what I was saying. This was even before the Black Panther.
Right.
This is like, so, before you started throwing Black Lives Matter on, that fist has been used long ago. For many different reasons. But it's easy, you know, because of the Black Lives Matter turn and salient on people's minds. You know, that's the first thing they go to, I guess.
Right.
If they like it. Human, that's what they do.
To end this show on a little lighter note, can I please, people, I'm putting it out there. Can we stop the running man challenge? The skipping man challenge. Can we please stop that?
Okay. First of all, yes, it's not a running man, because the running man is a whole different dance from what they're doing. So the skipping man is foolishness. And why is it a challenge? Like, they ain't doing nothing.
I think they're calling it a challenge because, you know, there's so many, like, it started with these two young men. And, you know, I let you see the video of them you saw the video of them yesterday of them on Ellen. Started with two young men in their high school class, it evolved when two Maryland basketball players took their chance to put it out there and do their thing. That's when it really kind of hit mainstream. Now, just every day you get on social media and you see another video of somebody else doing a running man challenge. And it's even gotten so far as to people using, like you saw yesterday, a video of Prince in a performance in Purple Rain, where it starts in with the slow movement of the very beginning of the song, and then when it hits the crux of the song, and he gets up and he starts moving, and he's moving right in beat with the song being played in the background, and it's just, oh my.
It's a mess. Can I just say one more thing? This wasn't on our agenda.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to say, people, road rage is real. I just saw a video yesterday. Now, apparently somewhere in Houston, you know how you get these lines and people want to move over because they didn't want to get in a line potentially. I don't know why, but they needed to merge over.
Right.
This car apparently didn't want to let them merge over. So, the lady get out of the car, and she and saying something to the man in the car. I think, I don't know, he winds up getting out of the car for some reason, and the guy that's driving the truck that the lady in, he gets out, and then they have words, they going back and forth. And all of them, I mean, I think the two drivers of the truck, the man was a white guy, and it was a heavyset white lady. There's a reason I call her heavyset, besides the fact that she was. We'll get to that in a second. So,
I think
it looked like he was Hispanic.
Yeah.
And then it was a black guy driving the car, little white Toyota looking something. So, they had their words. Everybody, you know, seemingly like, okay, whatever. He get back in the car. White lady come back to the window. She's saying something. He tosses a drink. The Hispanic guy tosses a drink out the passenger side door at him, which causes the white man to get out of his truck and run over and kick the man's car. Why did he do that? The black man jumped out of his car and ran over, and they started wailing on him. The Hispanic guy and the black guy, they wailing. She trying to get in. You can hear her yelling, no, no, no. Well, she got in the middle of the fight, and the black guy walls off and just pops her. And I was like, dang, she can take a punch. Because she didn't go down. Like, she bent a little bit, and then she had her hands up. And I was like, this is bad. This is bad. So, for some reason, they all gather. They get themselves together. They go back to the car. White man get in the car and his truck. The white lady get in the truck. And then he just floors it, like he just in reverse back into that car and tore the front of that man's little car up. And I was like, this is not happening. Like, this is not happening. And whoever, somebody else stuck in traffic was recording it. And then the man take off after they got in the truck. And then obviously we don't know what happened after that. But people, stay in your car. Somebody don't let you merge over, you just be mad for staying in your car. Because this could have went real bad if anybody had a gun that day.
Yeah, I actually saw that video this morning, so I know what you're talking about. Then it is.
Stay in your car. And she can take a punch. And I she can take a punch. Because he went there, I'm good, right on the jaw. And she just bent a little bit and was like, oh, no. You know, and then started screaming, stop, no. And I was like, lady, you kind of thought.
I mean, the momentum of the guy punching her should have took her down, but she stayed firm.
She held her ground. And she didn't even, like, she bent, you know, you're going to get moved a little bit. But I was like, she took a punch.
Mm.
But, yeah, stay in your car, people.
Yes, stay in your car. Staying in your car saves lives.
Saves lives. And now he got to go figure out what happened to insurance, and then all the drama that go along with that, trying to get the car fixed and getting the rentals, and if your insurance don't pay for rentals, how you gonna get to and fro? And it's just too much drama to stay in the car.
Yes, indeed. Well, I think that's gonna be our show for today. As always, I'm one of your co-hosts, Brian McKay, and I am with...
T, it's great to be a Florida Gator, Davis.
And this has been the Mac and T Show podcast. Thank you for listening.
This is the Mac and T Show. This is the Mac and T Show. We talk movies and TV shows, sports and world news, coasting like on a world cruise. Hosted by Brian McKay and T Davis. Yeah. You can't tame us. We go on to the top, we're becoming famous.
What time is it?
It's time for the Mac and T Show.
What time is it?
I said it's time for the Mac and T Show.